The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
And I'm already exhausted just listening to that. But God, what a day, right? So much breaking news and just an hour to deal with it all. We have actually two guests today and so a lot on the table. So let me begin with what happened today, because all of a sudden it became a really busy news day. It actually started yesterday with the special master showing that he'll not be another puppet of the former guy. So there are reasons to be cautiously optimistic. Then, in the wake of Putin pulling out all the stops and again threatening to go nuclear in a last-ditch effort to conquer Ukraine, the UN General Assembly convened. And, you know, I think Zelensky spoke today. I didn't see that part. But I did see Joe Biden. President Biden made a pretty a strong speech, I thought. Again, calling out, the bad guys, right? Take it away, Joe. Give us a taste.
Let us speak plainly. A permanent member of the United Nations Security Council invaded its neighbor.
Uh-oh.
Attempted to erase a sovereign state from the map. Russia has shamelessly violated the core tenets of the United Nations Charter. No more important than the clear prohibition against countries taking the territory of their neighbor by force. Again, just today, President Putin has made overt nuclear threats against Europe.
Yep.
And a reckless disregard for the responsibilities of the non-proliferation regime. Now, Russia's calling up more soldiers to join the fight, and the Kremlin is organizing a sham referenda to try to annex parts of Ukraine, an extremely significant violation of the UN Charter.
Yeah, it is. But as if that wasn't enough, right as Joe Biden was wrapping up his speech, all attention turned to New York, where Attorney General Letitia James announced a massive lawsuit against the former guy and his three eldest children for engaging in fraud to enrich himself, his family, and the Trump Organization. I think I've got a quick clip of Letitia James here, I believe. Where are you, Madam Attorney General? Here we go. Let's see if this works.
We show that they violated several state criminal laws, including falsifying business records.
Uh-oh.
Issuing false financial statements, insurance fraud, and engaging in a conspiracy to commit each of these state law violations. We believe the conduct alleged in this action also violates federal criminal law, including issuing false statements to financial institutions and bank fraud.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. And it goes on. She spoke for a good, 30 minutes or so. And it's a 222-page, $250 million lawsuit. And yes, it does include criminal referrals to the IRS and the Southern District of New York, which is the Justice Department. So hopefully justice will prevail. But that's not all. Of course, the grifting continues by way of Trump and his mimic. Have you noticed how my governor down here in Florida, the man I call moron death sentence, sort of delights in the mockery of desperate people, people who risked their lives to come here to apply for asylum in the U.S. They did it legally, by the way. When they entered the country, They said they want to apply for asylum, and then there's a process that takes over. And they're here awaiting the process, going through the process. But that wasn't enough for Ron DeSantis, who spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, taxpayer dollars, of Floridians to round up 48 Venezuelan refugees who entered the country legally to apply for asylum. And then he put them on two charter planes to Martha's Vineyard, of all places, thinking that, oh, the libs, they're going to freak out. Well, guess what? The people of Martha's Vineyard embraced them, took care of them, clothed them, fed them, gave them legal advice. And now, today, we learn that there is a lawsuit. Some of them are suing not only DeSantis, but his cronies for a number of reasons. Anyway, so, you know, and then the Fed raised interest rates another 0.75 point. So there's that. I told you it's a busy day. And I told you we have two guests today. It's kind of an embarrassment of riches. So let's get started. And our first guest is his first time here. So let me welcome to the program, Chris Layman. Hi, Chris. And congratulations on the new gig. Chris is the new DC bureau chief for The Nation magazine. And it's your first time here on the show. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Nicole. I'm very happy to be here. And amid what you've outlined as a blizzard of breaking news.
It really is, right? And then I threw you a curveball because when I first invited you on, I said, let's talk about the insanity that is the governor, the man who, you know, wants to be president down here in Florida. But then Letitia James introduced this massive lawsuit. And, you know, I've been talking about DeSantis for a while now because I live in Florida.
Another reason you must be tired.
Oh, boy. Oh, and, man.
The advantage of living in America today is we have a rich panoply of insanities to choose from.
Yeah, so, the old adage, may you live in interesting times. Yes, well, there we are, right? Yeah, so anyway, so I did want to ask you about this lawsuit that Letitia James introduced. Now, she's fighting an uphill battle. The first thing that people need to realize, and I think they do, and it may come as a disappointment to some, this is a civil lawsuit. This is not a criminal case that she's filed, right?
Right. It just has the criminal referrals you mentioned to the Southern District and the IRS. But yeah. It's been the history of Donald Trump's entire career and business empire that he drags out litigation in the most obstructionist, venal, self-serving way possible. I mean, we're seeing that play out, obviously, in the Mar-a-Lago special master case, which happily, I think, may be blowing up in his face right now. But this is more Trump's home turf, literally, in the sense that it involves his New York real estate empire. And it's also, you know, the New York legal system, which, let us never forget, you know, his great political mentor was Roy Cohn.
That's right.
After his tour as Joe McCarthy's right-hand man, was an ace political fixer for wealthy New York jerks like Donald Trump. And you know, was also famous both for stiffing anyone he worked with and dragging out legal proceedings to the vanishing point. So, I think we can expect this to be a sort of long tour through the courts, but it's still, as Attorney General James noted, it's very important. She's spent a lot of time compiling this case. It covers, not just New York, but properties in Nevada. I was also struck that, you know, the three Trump children were also indicted. I didn't think that's happened before. I didn't think it happened in the Trump University case, which she did successfully prosecute. So, you know, I do feel like, you know, it's early, obviously, but it appears to be a comprehensively researched and documented case.
Oh, very much so. And I haven't had a chance to read through the 222 pages, but there's a lot there. There's there. But I have heard from listeners who are going, you know, this is more of the same. He's going to skate. He's going to settle. He's going to settle for like pennies on the dollar. And, you know, he's going to walk away from. Well, what we learned today also is that he's been trying to settle with her. And so far, she's said no.
Burned. Yeah. And that, I mean, unfortunately, the justice system in this country does skew heavily toward wealthy offenders who are able to, you know, negotiate these kind of settlements that may look, you know, substantive in the headlines, but don't really mean much in terms of their overall wealth. Yeah, I think the other thing to bear in mind, too, is this, you know, this kind of chicanery is, again, the entirety of Donald Trump's, you know, career in history. He's always overvalued his own ego and material holdings. There was a funny case involving a biography of Trump that, you know, documented that he did not, in fact, he was not, in fact, a billionaire, as he loves to claim.
Right.
And Trump promptly sued this guy. And in depositions in the case, Trump responded that, well, on most days, he just feels like a billionaire. That's the kind of accounting he does. And it is, I mean, this is another conversation, but it is steeped in his, probably the most influential apostle of Norman Vincent Peale in The Power of Positive Thinking. And a lot of, you know, the stuff he says that are objectively lies are things he has worked himself into believing. Obviously it's achieved a new level of sophistication because, you know, there was an effort to overvalue a lot of properties for this obtaining loans and undervaluing others for the sake of obtaining tax write-offs. And let's not forget as well that in a related tax case, the CFO of the Trump organization, Weisselberg, I forget his first name.
Alan,
right. Thank you. Has pled guilty and is going to cooperate with the prosecution. So there is going to be, you know, a lot of material trickling out. And it comes at a time, obviously, when Trump is in the crosshairs of the Mar-a-Lago search and its aftermath. He feels hounded, I think, by your governor as a prospective 2024 candidate. So it's what's a little, you know, we should know by now when Trump feels sort of cornered and persecuted, that's the moment when he gets most bellicose and dangerous. And
that's,
I think,
right,
we saw a preview of that in the rally he staged in Youngstown, which was steeped in QAnon imagery, has had a lot of biblical apocalyptic rhetoric. You know, it's again sort of priming his base for violent action, as was the case prior to the January 6th insurrection. So, you know, it's bears watching for reasons other than the final outcome of these legal proceedings. I think Trump is entering another dangerous phase of demagoguery.
Without a doubt. And you can tell that he feels the walls closing in on him. And you mentioned the Youngstown rally. We all were disturbed by the image we saw of everybody in the crowd with one finger up. So it wasn't quite the Nazi salute, but it was something going on. And then we heard, you know, they were talking about the ominous music that was playing and everyone was so quiet. Well, it turns out that music was like the QAnon theme song or something. So he's gone all in with them because that seems to be all that's left. Right.
I think that's absolutely true. And he, you know, he is really adept at, you know, always playing the victim of, you know, appealing to this broad, you know, longstanding sense of cultural persecution on the right and you know, creating chaotic and violent outcomes, as we saw on January 6th.
Right. So, and then, you know, the fact is, you mentioned, well, DeSantis, we can't separate the two right now because there's this weird dynamic between them. I don't know if you noticed that the show card that I used, it was sort of a graphic of them physically looking alike. The recount, the website put together like a mashup of their verbal and physical, you know, mannerisms, and it's eerie. And so it seems Trump's got to be saying, well, he's stealing my act. And he already said that was my idea to send the migrants to Martha's Vineyard. It's like, oh my God, you know, trying to take credit for the worst instinct of this cretin. You know, it's like, how low can you go? It's the game of limbo. Who can go lower? And I'm hoping they'll cancel each other out. And I'm hoping that this stunt that DeSantis pulled has opened a lot of eyes to who this man really is.
Yeah, I have that sense. And that was what I wrote in my column for The Nation this week, that, you know, you've mentioned that it seems pretty clear that DeSantis has run afoul of the law in doing this. And if there is a precedent that is set that this is either a form of trafficking or kidnapping, it will be much, you know, I don't think he can wriggle out of it the way that Donald Trump might. You know, he doesn't have the, for all of his efforts to mimic Trump, which I also think may play to the base, I don't know. But they certainly have a whiff of desperation to me when I see him like doing the Trump gestures and vocal cadences on the stump and, you know, stealing from Trump's policy playbook with this episode. I you know, you forget that, you know, another son of Florida, Marco Rubio, briefly tried that in the 2016 primary cycle and it fell flat on his face. I think only Trump can, you know, he squares a lot of circles on the right that other, let's just say, less talented demagogues aren't able to.
Right. And, you know, and that's the thing about DeSantis. Unfortunately, I've had a front row seat to his weirdness over the last 4 years. And he is, he's like the lowest common denominator. He's mean. He picks up the worst of what has been successful for Trump and amplifies it. And the thing that I've been trying to let everybody know is I think DeSantis is even more dangerous because Donald Trump is just playing off his celebrity. He's been able to get away with this crap for decades. People know him. He was a reality TV star. They believe his bullshit. And he gets away with it. Ron DeSantis was a backbencher in Congress until Trump plucked him out of obscurity and endorsed his candidacy. He only won 4 years ago by like nothing, by the slimmest of margins.
After his opponent had imploded too. So yeah, I mean, I think, I haven't been following this year's race, but I think if Charlie Crist is smart, you know, there's a lot of material for him to work with.
There is. Now, Charlie's got his baggage too. When I first came back to Florida, he was attorney general, the Republican attorney general running for governor. And, you know, I did a morning show on a news talk radio station down here with one of the best journalists in all of Florida, a guy named Jim DeFede. And DeFede used to joke that Charlie Crist was the best Democratic governor Florida has had in decades. Well, Charlie Crist was a Republican, but quite prophetic because here he is now a Democrat trying to make amends. And I voted for Charlie Crist, even in the primary, because I think he's doing it for the right reasons. And I think he has the best chance of winning, certainly a better chance than Nikki Fried did. And now with DeSantis shooting himself in the foot and doubling down on it, apparently there was another plane that he chartered yesterday that was supposed to take more of these asylum seekers from Texas and send them to Delaware to, you know, to own Biden. State.
Right, right. Along with everything else, it's just like the crudest kind of trolling. Like, you know, it's just like pointing a finger at the map and saying, where are Democrats? And it's and, you know, the whole Martha's Vineyard stunt, you know, he was so clearly desperate. One of my sources pointed this out, you know, to make the people at Martha's Vineyard angry. And they just weren't.
You know? Right. No, they were in fact
people
awesome.
In need and helped them. What do you know?
And they embraced them. The scenes of them saying goodbye when they were getting on the bus to go to Cape Cod, to the military base where there were facilities for them, was moving. We heard that the AP Spanish students from the high school got to take the day off school so they could be interpreters. And they rallied to support these people. And furthermore, I've heard some officials from Martha's Vineyard who people don't realize it is a summer town. And the people that live on the island year round are not the wealthy and elite.
Democratic donors, right?
But they need workers. And it's, you know, so they're like, bring them, send them. We'll put them to work.
That's the other dumb thing is, you know, Massachusetts is right now in a very has a very tight labor market, and they would love to have, you know, to send more.
Right.
It was a stunt that was, you know, perhaps only surpassed in its cruelty by its stupidity.
Right. So Chris Layman, you joined The Nation. You've written for The Nation for a while. You've also written for other publications, and you still do The Baffler and New Republic. But you're now the D.C. bureau chief at The Nation, coming in at a pretty high pressure time for Washington, D.C., as we're coming
as you
on.
Say, may like, you live in interesting times.
No
right?
kidding. So yeah. Here we are, right at the beginning. Yeah. It's midterm time. We're 7 weeks out, less than 7 weeks out from the election. It's got to be pretty tense there. You're in D.C. now?
Is that where you're? I mean, I live in Maryland, but the Nation office is right there on Capitol Hill. And it is a really interesting time to be doing my job. I'm you know, having a lot of fun doing it, and also like any other sane citizen of this country, I'm horrified by what I'm covering.
I hear you. It's frightening, and I've been doing this for long enough that I sometimes feel like a broken record, and you can tell I'm old because I still talk about a broken record. But you know, it seems like every election I'm warning people, this is the most important election in our lifetimes. And everyone is, right?
No, it is really true. I wrote a column a couple of weeks ago about, you know, more than 60% of the electorate is going to have election deniers on the ballot this cycle. And a lot of them are, you know, candidates for governor and secretary of state who will certify the 2024 balloting. And you know, it's something that's unprecedented in our history. And, you know, I feel the same way. I'm a broken record. I've been warning about, you know, authoritarianism and inequality for all my career. But it is in critical mass.
And I think that is part of our job here, is to sound the alarm without being hyperbolic, because it isn't. It's real. They came very close to upending our democracy in November of 2020. They are putting all the tools, the people in place to actually do it next time. Yep. And, you know, we've been watching the Ken Burns new series. It's a 3-part series on the Holocaust. Apparently, I don't know if you've seen it yet. It's brilliant. Part 2 aired last night. And what I heard was that this was supposed to be released next year. But after seeing everything that's going on now, Ken Burns said, I want this out as soon as possible. And it's really important because, you know, in Germany, and I'm sorry, I know some people yell at me for making the correlation there, but I don't think you can ignore it. People knew that Hitler was on the rise, but when he took power, it happened like overnight, and all of a sudden, Jews couldn't get out of the country. They were in the ghetto. So, I mean, we're not being hyperbolic. We're trying to protect against the unthinkable happening.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, there's a song. I come from music radio in my past. There's a song by the band The Propeller Heads featuring Shirley Bassey doing the singing called History Repeating. And it's in that Shirley Bassey voice. It's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that is the warning that goes through my mind. So please keep up the warnings and make sure people understand how precarious the situation we're in.
Yes. And you go and do likewise amid all your many other tasks.
Webmaster, booker, I work from home. It worked out well during the pandemic, but it gets.
No, I hear you. I've worked from home for a decade prior to the pandemic, and you would have thought that gave me an edge. But
No, not at all. Anyway, Chris Layman, welcome to The Nation. We love The Nation around here, and you've got a great group of people who write with you. So hopefully we'll talk more in the future. I really, really appreciate you joining us today. It's nice to meet you. I've read you for a year, so it's nice to finally meet you, and thank you for being here.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me. I look forward to doing it again.
Me too. Thanks so much. All right. Bye-bye. You too. Chris Layman, he is the new D.C. bureau chief of The Nation magazine. Of course, you can find them at thenation.com. You should be reading them. It works with some of our favorite people, John Nichols, Ellie Mastal, and, you know, the list goes on. All right. Still to come, our old friend Harvey J.K., will be along in a little while. When I signed on, I look in the chat room, and again, the show card that I put together for today, I put together a graphic each day, and I'm putting it up on the screen now. Those of you listening to an audio stream aren't going to see it, but it is like, photo booth strips where you go in the booth and you pull the curtain and you get like four photos for, I was going to say a quarter. I'm dating myself yet again. But it's three photos of, you know, the orange guy on the left. And then on the right, it's three photos of Death Sentence doing the same, making the same gestures. Of course, someone in the chat rooms goes, I hate seeing these people. Yes, well, you know, I do too, but what are you going to do? But I did find this clip that was put together by The Recount. The Recount is John Heilman's website, and I love it because they do pull a lot of video clips, and it works out well. Hold on, I'm fumfering because I'm trying to find the video. It's not with my usual library of videos, but I got to share this with you because they put together this mashup that shows. Hold on, let me just pull up my account because I tweeted it this morning so I can play it right from there. Sometimes I'm just not not as organized as I should be. Okay, here it is. So what I'm going to play for you is this mashup, again, from The Recount. Check them out, therecount.com. If you're listening to, you know, the audio stream, you'll hear it. You'll definitely hear the audio, because even their words are like this. It's creepy and frightening. But all right, hold on. I gotta get the shot up. See, this is where the problem comes in when I do everything, because sometimes I it would be nice if I had a producer, but you know, I run on a very tight budget here because this show is not behind a paywall. And I'm dependent on your contributions to keep us going. So certainly there's not enough money for a producer or anything like that. All right. So here I've got the video up. It is the former guy and the guy who wants to be the new soon to be former guy, I guess. Here it goes.
Anybody here would do it.
Project to get
judges are a priority.
And honestly, we have businesses that have been locked down and lives destroyed for over a year based on no COVID vaccine passports
made in China
and shipped
Russia.
Here. Why would we want so many important things?
Can we take them?
To us be at the whim of China?
Anybody here would do it.
Project
he
to get
judges. All right, enough. He even signs his stuff with a Sharpie. I mean, pandering much? It's just absolutely insane and creepy. I know they say that flattery is the best form of compliment or something. I just think it's flat out creepy. And certainly when it comes to these two, everything about both of them is creepy. I mean, these are people I would not want to be stuck in any kind of room with, that's for sure. All right, I am getting our next shot together for our next guest because I think he's here. Where is he?
Well, where is he?
Where is who?
Where is Harvey?
Oh, you mean Harvey J.K.
Yeah, Harvey.
Well, Harvey. He's coming up right now on the Nicole Sandler Show.
There he is. Harvey is Professor Emeritus of Democracy and Justice at University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. I got it right this time without...
To us be...
Oops, wrong pot. Without screwing anything up. Hi, Harvey.
Good afternoon, Nicole. Great to see you.
Great to see you, too. So how are things? I know the last time I tried to get you to come on, you were weekending in New York.
Well, it was a busy summer. Our younger daughter got married early in the summer.
Yep. We played the video of your wonderful walk down the aisle.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And then the next time we actually went back to New York. I don't usually go back at the end of the summer, but I used to, but my wife and daughter are both huge tennis fans. So they try to go to the U.S. Open early in the U.S. Open so that, you know, they're not competing for like super expensive seats and things like that. And so I went along and I got to meet a lot of, see a lot of people that during the pandemic, actually, I had failed to see. So, you know, it was good.
Good.
It was good.
Good.
Well, here in Wisconsin, just for the record,
yeah,
things are politically tighter than I really expected. I'll just say that.
Well, let's talk about that because you've got the governor's race. You've got a Senate race and a governor's race, right? Just like us here in Florida.
Two truly significant races. First, the governor's race, which to me is really, really, I mean, I can't imagine a more significant governor's race.
Well, the one in Florida, maybe. we've got Charlie Crist going up against Governor Death Sentence. So,
yes, let me put it this way. One which will affect your life and one which will affect my life.
Okay.
So Tony Evers, who is he's a good Democrat. He's not the most dynamic figure in the Democratic Party, that's for sure.
Right.
He was the head of the state school board for some years, and who meets him says he's a really nice guy. And his role so far has been to veto what the Republican-controlled legislature has been passing. So his role has been really significant. And the polls show, I mean, the last poll I saw showed him a bit ahead of the Trump-style Republican candidate, Michaels. And Michaels is a guy who I don't even think he actually lives in Wisconsin. He's a very wealthy man with a place in Connecticut, as far as I can see. But his idea of governing would really be to take us back into the late 19th century on everything from education to women's rights. It's absolutely scary, the kinds of things he wants to do. And what's really scary is to think that my fellow citizens, to the tune of maybe, half of them, are seriously entertaining such a governor. It's beyond me. Okay. This is not the state that I came to 40 plus years ago.
Right. Because Wisconsin, and I'm embarrassed to admit I've never been, but Wisconsin is known as like the birthplace of the progressive movement in this country.
Right. Right. I mean, for a start, it was the birthplace of the Republican Party when the Republican Party was a progressive party.
Right.
Okay. And that's only about, 70 miles south of where I live in Ripon, Wisconsin, where they held that first meeting, which was basically an anti-slavery meeting and generally progressive group that got together and eventually, place Lincoln in the presidency. And then during the early 19th century, this was the state where Robert La Follette and the La Follette family broke with the Republican Party to create the Progressive Party. And Robert La Follette Sr. was clearly one of the most progressive figures in the early 20th century among political activists and figures.
That's Fighting Bob, right?
Yes. And then his son, Bob La Follette Jr., was one of the three most significant U.S. senators in the 1930s backing FDR's New Deal programs, even though he himself was not a member of the Democratic Party. So, I mean, this is the kind of state that I thought. Now, undeniably, we're also the state of Joe McCarthy. There's no question about that. Okay. But it's just astounding to me that ever since Scott Walker defeated forgot his name right now, it won the governorship, we have become this really reactionary. Well, it's not a truly reactionary place, but it's on the verge of becoming truly reactionary. The line has been basically that the governor saves us. Now,
right, but it wasn't only the governor, because then you had this Neanderthal, Ron Johnson, beat one of the best senators we've ever had in Russ Feingold.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very strange that way. But it's also strange if you imagine that we have a liberal progressive senator in Tammy Baldwin, think about it, in a state that shows so many reactionary inclinations of late, they elected and reelected Tammy Baldwin, who is a gay,
the first gay member of out gay member of the Senate. Yes.
Yeah. Right. So, I mean, what am I going to say about all that? But it's also the case that the irony would be that the governor would be reelected, that is the Democratic Evers, and then we lose control. We already lost control on basic grounds, but we could lose enough seats possibly in the Senate and Assembly in the state that they could override his veto. And
that
makes it all the scarier. Yeah. In fact, for the first time ever, I could say that we've talked about what's the line that Wisconsin has to cross that would lead us to move.
You know, and we are moving. We've got to be out of this house in a couple of months. The question is, we're talking about going to Arizona. I know, I hear it all. I know Arizona doesn't have water. It's hot. It's Trumpy. David's son lives there, and he went to school there. And so there's a reason. And for me, it's closer to Los Angeles, which is where my friends are and everything. But here we are. So much will ride on what happens on November 8th, because in Florida, if DeSantis wins again, I'm out of here. No question.
But in
Arizona, you've got a similar matchup with Carrie Lake, who's batshit crazy, against Katie Hobbs, who's great. So if Katie Hobbs wins in Arizona and DeSantis wins here, it's a no-brainer. We go there.
But
if it's the other way, if Carrie Lake wins there and Charlie Crist wins here, we may have to stay here. So everything is dependent on what happens in this election.
Yeah. Now, the other race that we referred to before is the race for the U.S. Senate.
Yep.
Ron Johnson, who actually, 12 years ago, defeated Russ Feingold.
One of
most principled and progressive U.S. senators.
Yeah.
And then 6 years later, ran and defeated another Democrat. I don't even remember who it was.
I don't either.
Okay. But this time there was a race for the Democratic nomination, which was kind of curious when you think about it. The most progressive of the candidates was a man named Tom Nelson.
Okay, right.
And Tom, when I say most progressive, because people use the word progressive and they leave out a really key ingredient all too often. Tom Nelson was also very pro-labor. Okay.
That's important, especially in Wisconsin.
Yeah. And he's from the Fox Valley where I live, and he's further south. And I've known him for quite some time, and I wouldn't have assumed that he would have been my candidate necessarily, because there were other possibilities. But he was the first candidate of the group to immediately endorsed this project I've been working on for creating a 21st century economic bill of rights.
Yes.
And I had made public anyone who's willing to endorse it will get my support. So I was with Tom up until the point he withdrew from the race in favor of Mandela Barnes, who is the current lieutenant governor, an African-American political figure from Milwaukee. And Mandela is undeniably a progressive, okay? But he ran in the first, up until the primary, he ran what has to be considered a truly mediocre campaign. Uh-huh. Somehow the D.C. consultants got to him, and he just literally, his website was empty of any kind of meaning, and his campaign speeches were nothing to write home about. But anyhow, the candidate who most likely would, have threatened him was a man named Lassery, who was the son of the billionaire Lassery, who was very much involved in Milwaukee in creating this new big basketball arena and so on. So he got union support, that candidate. But I have to tell you, he actually had a good website. He talked about the rights of workers. I thought this could be really good. And then there was a debate among the candidates, and I never saw somebody as flat compared to his website. And
really?
I thought, no, this guy's finished. And he, too, dropped out. He had a sizable following. And then there was a woman who was a candidate who's the current current treasurer of the state of Wisconsin. I'm blanking on her name because I've never been a fan of her. She was a Clintonite.
There was another one too, and I'm blanking on his last name. Crist, who was in the state senate, who led the exodus from the state to Illinois
There's Chris Larson
Chris Larson.
It may not be the one you're thinking of, but Chris Larson from down in Milwaukee, the Bayview area of Milwaukee, he was my candidate to begin
That's
with.
That's exactly who I was thinking of, yes.
That was my candidate to begin with. I've known him for some years, mostly because of labor connections, but he came in late to the campaign, and I think it was very difficult for him to start raising money. So he withdrew and threw his support to Barnes. Lenny, ever since the primary, I've been, you know, very keen on seeing Barnes elected.
Have to be.
And I really would have imagined, this is the truth, Ron Johnson, seriously, I don't mean to insult the state of Florida if it can be insulted anymore. but Ron Johnson is the kind of guy you would have expected some, you know, some southern, in fact, Florida for years wasn't some southern state, but, you know,
the
likes of Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, that
here.
Kind of state.
Right.
I mean, he's an idiot, frankly. He's a billionaire idiot.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a student who I won't name for fear there'd be repercussions. Had a student who interned with him because it was the only Senate internship he could get, who asked my permission to do it. And I said, no, you have to do it for whatever career you're going to pursue. And that's when Johnson wasn't half as bad as he became. And he came home from that and said, basically, look, Ron Johnson's an idiot, you know, whatever. So,
But you know what? This is the year of the Republican idiotic senatorial candidate.
That's right.
Herschel Walker? Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
and
right.
The fact that's even a tight race is stunning.
Okay, so here's a cheap theory off the top of my head. Trump basically has turned the Republican Party into idiots.
Yeah.
And since Trump himself, and since they all want to outdo Trump now. And by the way, we'll turn to DeSantis in a moment.
Yes, we will.
I'm sure. Okay. So I thought Ron Johnson would be an easy target for anyone with half a political brain. But because Mandela Barnes ran a fairly mediocre campaign up until the primaries, I don't think his campaign took off outside of the folks who were going to vote in the Democratic primary. Mm. But here's the worst part. Ron Johnson and the Republicans have been basically saying, oh, if you send Barnes to the U.S. Congress, to the U.S. Senate, obviously, he's going to just be another voice in the Senate like Bernie Sanders, or he'll join the squad in defunding the police.
Oh, please.
Okay. Now, here's the problem. Yeah. Now, here's the problem. That in itself shouldn't be a problem, you would think. But Barnes is still not running a smart campaign. His TV ads start off by reciting the Republican attacks on him.
Oh, God.
And then denying
saying, that's
them.
Not me. Bro, brilliant.
So here's what they're saying about me. That's not me. Right, exactly.
Oh, God.
So I think to myself, Oh, 2 weeks ago, he was up anywhere from 5 to 10 points ahead of Johnson. Great. In the last couple of weeks, he's lost 9 points. They're breaking even now.
Ugh. God. Well, the same thing in Georgia, where Raphael Warnock was, it depends on the poll you look at. In some, he's comfortably ahead. But in others, they're neck and neck. Herschel Walker, the man has CTE. It's the only way I can explain how just stupid he is.
Yeah.
Right? But, okay.
Not to mention the idiot in Pennsylvania running against the kid.
Oh,
right?
Dr. Oz, Mastriano, and not to mention Tommy Tuberville, who's already in the Senate. I mean, how low can you go? I feel like we need to do a new game of limbo. How low can you go? We're going to do a political limbo. I'm going to have to put that all together. Because down here in Florida, we're going pretty low. So, Harvey, I thought of you because you are a historian. You're a professor. And when I heard DeSantis's latest word salad, and all I could think was ranch or blue cheese with that, I thought, I need to get your take on this because let me be magnanimous here. It takes a certain kind of talent to string together so many words in such a nonsensical way. So let me share with you DeSantis, who was asked by a reporter in this clip, why he's using Florida taxpayer dollars to take a group of migrants who are in the country legally, by the way, though that wasn't part of the question, from Texas and send them up to Martha's Vineyard. Has nothing to do with Florida. Why am I paying hundreds of thousands of dollars? $12,000 it came out to for each of these 48 people. $12,000 each. When a commercial flight, if you were wondering, from San Antonio, Texas to Martha's Vineyard is under $400. Yeah. Just saying. You know, it's just irresponsible and sickening cruel and ugly. But when he was asked, this was his response. All right. get ready.
The problem is we're not seeing mass movements of them into Florida.
Right.
So you end up with a car with maybe two. And if we know that that's illegal and there's someone that's kind of smuggling, then committing crime, then you can do arrest. There have been drug seizures.
What?
But that's not effective enough to stop the mass migration. But it's just coming in onesie twosies. So we've had people on the border for last summer. We've done a lot of intelligence. And everyone down there will say between a third and 40% of the people coming across are seeking to end up in Florida.
They'll say that
and
they
so
were going to go to Florida.
We have to go and figure out, okay, who are those people likely to be?
Thought
and if you can do it at the source and divert to sanctuary jurisdictions, the chance they end up in Florida is much less.
Oh, my God. So they're going to determine, because people say that 30 to 40% of them want to go to Florida. So we're going to figure out who they are, and we're going to do so. It's thought crimes. It's like, what was that Tom Cruise movie? Like, I forget what it was called, but you know, future thought, right? And so they're going to read their minds and say, you're planning to go to Florida. Well, we're going to preempt that and send you to Martha's Vineyard. What the fuck?
By the way, I've got this great idea for anyone who's a Latino in Texas. If they'd like to spend this next summer in Martha's Vineyard, if they ask you where you're heading, you tell them you're heading to Florida. You're bound to end up in Martha's Vineyard. But wait, you know, I have to tell you, first of all, if we had an energized Department of Justice,
yes,
right now, Ron DeSantis would be in custody.
Yeah, he would. Yeah,
he's involved in human trafficking.
That's right.
I mean, even the sheriff from the county where this appears
is
investigating the human trafficking
yes.
question. I've asked a couple of lawyers. I said, yeah, it's human trafficking. OK, but then to talk about the way in which he did it. So I thought to myself, onesies and twosies?
Onesies and twosies. I mean,
so that means that people are just like piling in, not even piling in, they're getting into
a couple
into
of people
cars.
In a car. So
there's like this caravan of innumerable cars.
But it's
cars
not even a caravan. It's a trickle. Yes. He admitted that there is no influx of these people into Florida. You know who we get in Florida? We get the Cubans and the Dominicans and the Haitians. Yeah. And there used to be a policy called wet foot, dry foot. And what that was, because they have to travel over water. Again, Florida's a peninsula. We're surrounded by water on three sides, and then we border on Alabama and Georgia. Come on. Not exactly Mexico. So they'd come in by boat. There was a policy that if you are Cuban you make it to shore, if you get 1 foot on shore, you're safe. You're here. You're allowed to stay here. That's the wet foot, dry foot policy. If they came up and got you right before your foot landed on the sand, too bad, you're going back to Cuba. But it was only Cuba. It didn't apply to the Dominicans or the Haitians. So it's very unfair down here to begin with. But that's the migrant problem that they have in Florida, if it's a problem. Not this, but DeSantis just like, I got to be part of that. I got to be as cruel as I can be. I got to be show what an asshole I am.
Well, I can tell you that I want to warn my Jewish brethren in Florida that if DeSantis comes out as an anti-Semite, you might end up in Martha's Vineyard if you don't watch your asses.
I'll go to Martha's Vineyard. I saw something today where someone's like, I'll go. You know, I've been wanting to go, but I can't afford the airfare. So come on, the next plane.
By the way, it is expensive because, I mean, you could get a ferry, but it's pricey. Once in my life, I made it to Martha's Vineyard a few years ago. My daughter, my older daughter, and one week at a house in Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that it could sleep like eight people.
Right.
So it was the two of my son-in-law, my daughter, and my grandson, and then their two best buddies from the past. And they said, why don't you and mom come along? You know, you could have a good time. And I thought to myself, yeah, they want a babysitter. I will go. Right. So, but yeah, Martha's Vineyard was very nice. And by the way, it serves great lobster rolls, but I don't know if the Venezuelans anyhow, Martha's Vineyard is a really nice place. But what I didn't realize till I arrived in Martha's Vineyard is there's a beautiful neighborhood in Martha's Vineyard, gorgeous neighborhood, which is African-American, which is a very long time settlement of African-Americans. It may well date back to the time of you know, the Underground Railroad, mm-hmm. where people got to Massachusetts and they literally, you know, hid these folks over in Martha's Vineyard. And the neighborhood is gorgeous. If you should Google it sometimes, the homes are just fabulous.
Well, I'm sure.
They actually are like a tourist site.
You know, here's the thing, Harvey, and I was talking with Chris Lehman about this before. Martha's Vineyard in the summertime is the playground for the rich and famous, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that's
yeah.
the summer. That's 2 to 3 months out of the year. The rest yeah. of the year, there are people who live there. They are not the rich and famous. They are regular people. But here's the yeah. deal. A regular person who goes to Martha's Vineyard to get employment can't afford housing. So anybody right. who That's hires right. somebody has to supply housing. In fact, there's a radio station on Martha's Vineyard. Of course, you know, this is what I know, the world of radio. Yeah. It's WMVY. Really cool yeah. AAA radio station, right? Ah, yeah. And they were looking for somebody. The job included housing because on what you make, radio people don't make a lot of money unless you're in sales or you do the morning show and you're wildly successful. So they subsidize the job with housing because you can't afford to live there. So, you know, the people who are on the island now, it is off season. After Labor Day, season is over. The mainlanders, the rich people, go back to their lives. And what's left on the island are the people who live there year round. So they're regular folk. And they, you know, they care about their, and they're liberal. And they, so that means they care about their fellow human beings.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I knew I had an editor who was living on Martha's Vineyard. And he was high up in the publishing house. But he would have to, but he sort of was the vanguard of what became the Zoom experience. He was doing everything for them. And his wife, who actually had a much higher paying job, she was commuting back and forth from Martha's Vineyard. And I kept wondering if you could buy like a weekly pass on the airline or something.
Or the ferry that you have, you know, I'm sure there's commuter stuff. You know, in the summertime when I lived in New York, and I was, you know, I was doing radio in New York. I made a decent living. We would go into house shares for the summer in the Hamptons or on Fire Island. It's the same kind of thing. But, of course, Martha's Vineyard is on a more exclusive level. That's where former presidents hang out, you know.
Right. Now, I've never been to Nantucket, the next island out.
Nor have I. Nor have I. You know, my dad's from Boston. My dad was born in Chelsea. He lived there. Ah. I went there. I for about a year and a half, I lived in Salem, New Hampshire, just over the border, because the radio station that I programmed was called The River, WXRV, in Haverhill, Massachusetts. So we called ourselves a Boston station, but we were really right on the border of New Hampshire. It was cheaper to live in New Hampshire. I never, ever made it out to the Cape, never made it to Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket. I did, on the way out, as my daughter, who was at the time, when we moved back to Florida, we came back in time for her to start kindergarten here. On our way out, we stopped at the address in Chelsea where my father grew up. And I took a picture on the steps in front of the house. It's still sitting there. But I, you know, I feel horrible that I lived there and never did the exploring of amazing, beautiful lands. So,
You know, Cape, I've never been to the Cape either. And I know that a lot of households where two members of the household were faculty, you know, husband and wife or husband, that was the popular thing to do, was to go to the Cape in the summertime. Okay. And that surely has got to be terrible. Well, it's more expensive than staying in Green Bay, Wisconsin in any case.
Right, so,
We couldn't afford that. My wife is British originally, as you may know. And so we were regularly having to save so that every other summer we could get back to Britain to visit her family, who, by the way, her parents retired from school teaching and had a cottage on the coast of Wales. So I didn't need Cape Cod. It was pretty nice.
I guess.
So,
right. Wow. Yeah. Nice. Right. Hey, Harvey, I'm going to do a complete left turn because one topic that I haven't really dealt with today, and I didn't yesterday either, because Marcy Wheeler was on and we actually taped the interview yesterday in the morning. So before the special master did his bidding, I'm intrigued by the term special master. I just think it's an anachronism. It just it doesn't fit today,
I can't fathom it either, because you can't call it a master suite any longer. Why should we call it master anything, right?
You can't call it a master suite anymore.
Didn't you ever hear that on House, it was HGTV TV. Or somewhere like that?
It's no longer apparently, the master suite.
Ever in the wake of Black Lives Matter,
it's the primary suite.
I mean, I still call it a master suite, but apparently, it's you're supposed to call it now the The main suite?
The primary suite, I think.
Primary suite. There you go. Right.
Okay. Well,
so I don't know. I knew about the. I don't know much about this master.
Yeah.
Role.
Well,
but apparently the master they appointed, who was
a good one,
was a Trump nominee, turned on Trump, right?
Well, but he's a conservative, but he's a judge. He's been described as a judge's judge. So I was looking for a good, quick, wrap up of what happened yesterday, and it comes from an unlikely source. A musical source. It's a friend of the show. His name is actually Bruce W. Nelson, but he has an alter ego named Mangy Fetlocks, who does these songs. So here in 46 seconds is Mangy Fetlocks with the story of the special master, Trump disaster.
It appears Trump may have miscalculated. Well, it appears the special master may in time prove a disaster for that slimy orange bastard Donald Trump. 'Cause he's masterly and special. When he's up close in the flesh, he'll bring a point of view that's fresh to Donald Trump. Donald thought they'd picked a ringer that could save him. Thought the special master concept would be great. Yet the message that the special master gave him is that he recognizes bullshit on a plate. Well, it appears the special master may in time prove a disaster for that slimy orange bastard Donald Trump.
Mangy Fetlocks.
Screwed up again, Donnie.
Screwed up again, Donnie. Isn't he great? He's just...
I love it. I absolutely love it. You always get these great songs, you know?
Mangy Fetlocks. He records a song or two, a video like that every day. Posts it on Facebook around 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And he just keeps them coming. There's a lot of talented people out there.
As long as we're on the subject of these slimy types and these dictatorial wannabes, I have to tell you that for years, you know, I started out in Latin American studies as a subject. And so, you know, I know plenty about dictatorships, but I haven't been back in Latin America since, geez, back in the '70s, actually, because it's been years, decades since I've studied, made that my subject of study. But I've made contacts because of folks who wanted to interview me on shows and stuff like that. So I have an invitation to go to Brazil to lecture a few days in December of 2023.
Wow.
The question is, will Brazil lose its dictatorship because Bolsonaro, who keeps telling people he will not give up the presidency and the elections are coming soon? Lula, who is the progressive candidate, has been president already and did a damn good job fighting poverty. I'm hoping that he wins. But the question is, if Bolsonaro will not give up the presidency, will there be some kind of confrontation? Will the military take over? That kind of stuff. So anyhow, it seems to be the not our problem alone.
No. This, you know, look, so much is not our problem alone. And this is one of the problems in this country, the dumbing down of America again. You know, you listen to these cretins from the right talking about, oh, inflation and the price of gas. Well, first of all, have you looked at the price of gas on a global scale? We pay by far the lowest prices, even when we were paying $5-6 a gallon, still lower by much than the rest of the world. Then inflation everywhere. You know, they just raised the interest rates another 0.75 today here. But around the world, it's even more. Inflation is higher and stronger. These are not unique problems to the U.S. This all came out of the pandemic, and this is a global issue. So all of them pointing fingers at Joe Biden and saying, go Brandon, fuck you, because it's not, you know, look, I'll call him out, as you know, when it's necessary.
Right. Sure.
This is not the place. This, you know, he's actually trying to do something about it. The gas prices and inflation are not Biden's fault. If you want to blame somebody, blame Mr. COVID.
Definitely not. I will tell you that the supply chain questions, a whole host of things, some of which I do think Biden and the Democrats should quickly have addressed. Yeah. However, they didn't cause them. And whenever you've got a crisis, it takes a while to get out of it. You know, I still have serious reservations about this administration. And a good part because, as I've said over and over again, and I know we're running out of time, but the Democrats, and we should take this up in a few weeks, or actually after the election, the Democrats will never prevail truly prevail in a way that will enable us to truly take back America until they seriously develop a story, a compelling story that people can relate to and come to see their own futures inside of.
Right.
But, of that story.
But there's a wrench thrown into the works now, which is this group of people, and I'll paint them all with a broad brush. They're Republicans, and they lie about every single thing.
We are living in a time in which we're not competing just with the likes of Reagan, who, by the way, was a storyteller.
Right.
We're competing with the likes of the Trumpsters and DeSantis and others who are just outright liars.
Liars. You're right. They lie outright about liars. Everything. Yeah. And so when you can't trust the truth, I mean, I sound like a broken record saying this, but I used to say, I would love to have a good, honest, down in the dirt discussion with a real conservative, a Republican, not a Trumper, somebody who will stipulate to the basic facts, sky is blue, grass is green. And it's harder and harder with each passing day to find somebody like that. They don't exist.
You know, if you're really serious about it sometime, I can recommend one or two people who were solidly conservative, but would have nothing to do with the likes of Trump.
Right. See, what I want to talk to is the person who is a Republican and chooses to look the other way when it comes to this crap. Because there are many of them, people who were somewhat, on the cusp. Yeah, they had weird ideas, but they were decent people. And now they've sold out every principle that they may have ever had to back this guy. Look, now, I'm not saying Lindsey Graham was ever a credible, nice, normal human being, but
God,
my goodness,
it. No, it waits.
No, but the extreme to which he went, and I read something today. There's a new book coming out, apparently, the night of January 6th, and we all saw him when they came back into session, and he's like, "I'm done. I've had enough. I was with him. I can't do it anymore. This is done. I'm over it." I had tears because I'm thinking, finally, this nightmare is going to end, and then 2 days later, he's back doing the same bullshit. Nah, apparently he was accosted at the airport by some people who just read him the riot act. And he's like, okay, I can't take that. So I'm on Trump's side again.
Pathetic. He's a pathetic creature and we have to suffer him in the Senate. That's just the worst thing. Unfortunately, I know you're running out of time and I need to get running.
Okay.
Okay. But don't hesitate. Let me know if you want me back soon and we'll take up a whole host of issues. Okay.
You got it. Harvey JK, you're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Harvey. Professor.
Thank you.
Harvey J.K. See, there he is. We sometimes wonder where Harvey is. All right. With that, we're done. Today is Peace Day. I didn't know that either, B, in the chat room, but cool. Yeah, but then he went to the airport, Jacques Dolphy. There's no accounting for the cravenness of so many people. Mostly Republican politicians, but yeah, there are some Democrats who fit the bill as well. All right. That's it. We're done. Tomorrow, Thursday, Howie Klein will be here. I'll try to get in some of the other stuff that I've been holding on to for the last few days because I've overbooked the show. And then Friday, I'm preparing you, Dar Williams. Even if you think you're not a fan or you don't know her music, she's a folk singer. She's awesome. I first met her 32 years ago when her first album came out. And we played it at the radio station I worked at in Los Angeles. And it was funny because we taped the interview yesterday. It'll air tomorrow, Friday. And during it, I reminded her of how we met. And throughout the interview, you could see like she was remembering. I remember you. And so it was wonderful. It's a great interview on so many fronts. She has a new book out about how to write a song that means something. I keep screwing up the title, but that's basically the gist of it. I'll get it right on Friday. And it's written for everybody. You don't have to be a musician or a songwriter, but you know me, I'm always trying something new, thus the artwork. I've not yet written a song. Well, I did when I was like 11 and learning how to play the guitar, but that doesn't count. So maybe we'll write a song together. All right. With that, we're done. I will, as usual, leave you with the news, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you for being here. Oh, quick programming note. So Marcy Wheeler was here yesterday. Again, we taped the interview early in the morning yesterday before the whole special master get together. Well, tonight on the broadcast, Marcy Wheeler will join Brad Friedman, and they're going to pick up where we left off because, you know, Brad and I work together in the, sort of this sense. So we covered up until the special master meeting. That's where they're going to, I think, pick up. So check out the broadcast. It's usually posted at bradblog.com by 8 p.m. Eastern. That's what time the show runs on the Progressive Voices Network at progressivevoices.com. Okay, with that, I'm done. I will see you tomorrow. I'll leave you with the news. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the work that I do. Mwah! See you tomorrow.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The special master has spoken. Putting aside the odd title, Judge Raymond Deary, a man suggested by the Trump camp for the job, held his first meeting on Tuesday with lawyers for the former guy and prosecutors for the Department of Justice. Judge Deary told the Trump team that they would have to provide proof of Trump's assertion that he declassified the materials that he took with him from the White House before he left office. Deary said that if the government provides evidence that the documents are classified and Trump's team doesn't support its claim that they're declassified, quote, as far as I'm concerned, that's the end of it. Trump's lawyer, ironically named Jim Trusty, said that the former president's team couldn't provide that information now because that could weaken their defense in any possible criminal case. Judge Deary was having none of it. He told them to hurry up and provide the evidence, saying, quote, you can't have your cake and eat it. Touche. From the ridiculous to the insane, Florida's governor and wannabe 2024 presidential contender Ron DeSantis is batting back at criticism of his stunt to demean and embarrass a group of 48 refugees from Venezuela who made arduous treks to the U.S. to legally seek asylum. Well, DeSantis was pressed on Tuesday about why the state of Florida would pay to transport migrants from Texas instead of from Florida. And in response, DeSantis offered a giant word salad, during which he did admit that there isn't an influx of migrants in Florida.
The problem is we're not seeing mass movements of them into Florida. So you end up with a car with maybe two. That's not effective enough to stop the mass migration, but it's just coming in onesie-twosies. And everyone down there will say between a third and 40% of the people coming across are seeking to end up in Florida. We have to go and figure out, okay, who are those people likely to be? And if you can do it at the source and divert to sanctuary jurisdictions, the chance they end up in Florida is much less.
What? So thought crimes and onesie-twosies. Okay. Well, perhaps this cruel stunt is backfiring? On Monday, the sheriff of Bexar County, Texas, announced that he was opening an investigation into whether these migrants were the victims of a crime, saying quite definitively they were, quote, lured under false pretenses. Then came news of a class action lawsuit brought by three of them against DeSantis and other Florida officials in federal court. Lawsuit alleging that DeSantis and his cronies engaged in, quote, a premeditated, fraudulent, and illegal scheme centered on exploiting the migrants for the sole purpose of advancing their own personal, financial, and political interests. It also accuses DeSantis of inappropriately using federal coronavirus relief funds to pay for the flights. And it appears that he was going to do it again on Tuesday. He again chartered planes, this time to take refugees from Texas and drop them in Delaware, the home of President Biden. When asked about that happening, Biden suggested that the Florida man check out Delaware's beautiful shoreline. All right. Well, at press time this morning, we are awaiting a planned 11:30 a.m. Eastern major announcement from New York Attorney General Letitia James. While we wait, the Justice Department on Tuesday charged 47 people with fraudulently collecting nearly $250 million from a federal coronavirus pandemic relief program intended to provide food for needy families. Federal prosecutors said the defendants, all tied to the Minnesota nonprofit Feeding Our Future, participated in what they call a, quote, brazen scheme of staggering proportions. The defendants used a web of shell companies and bribes, with one defendant allegedly creating a fake list of children they were serving meals to. But they weren't. Some of those charged bought luxury cars, jewelry, and even houses with the money. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the case was the largest pandemic relief fraud scheme charged to date, which means there are probably more coming. And this doesn't even get into dark money in elections. If they're not making you mad, then you're just not aware of what's going on. There's only 7 weeks left until Election Day, and Democrats are finally confronting the issue, scheduling a vote in the Senate today on legislation known as the Disclose Act. This bill would require all groups spending money in elections or in support or opposition of a judicial nominee to disclose donations of $10,000 or more. This might be the most important piece of legislation if we're ever to return this country to a functioning democratic republic. On the global front, Russian dictator Vladimir Putin taking drastic measures to stop his battlefield losses. In a rare television address, Putin announced the immediate, quote, partial mobilization of Russian citizens, pledging to use all means to, quote, defend the country and its people. Well, this isn't defense, it's offense. But this means he'll be calling up around 300,000 reservists. And that, in turn, has seemingly spurred an exodus. Flights out of Russia quickly sold out as people try to flee. But wait, there's more. Putin again threatened to pull out the nukes.
This is not a bluff. The citizens of Russia can be sure that the territorial integrity of our homeland, our independence, and freedom will be ensured. And those who try to blackmail us with nuclear weapons should know that the prevailing winds can turn in their direction.
And as if that's not enough, some of the Russian-controlled parts of eastern and southern Ukraine, Luhansk, Kherson, Zaporizhia, and Donetsk provinces, announced on Tuesday that they'd be holding referendums on formally becoming part of Russia. Those rush votes are scheduled to start Friday in places where Russia and Kremlin-backed separatists occupy large swaths of territory. The head of Russia's Security Council, former President Medvedev, said that the referendums and subsequent annexation would be irreversible and would let Moscow use, quote, any means to defend the territory. Ukraine and Western leaders called the referendums a sham that won't stop Ukraine from reclaiming its rightful lands. And it's under this backdrop that both President Joe Biden and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will address the UN General Assembly today. Stay tuned. And strap in. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell previously warned that the Fed's drive to curb inflation by aggressively raising interest rates would bring some pain. Well, brace yourself, because today the Fed meets and they're expected to raise short-term rates by another 0.75 point for the third consecutive time. But take a look at what's happening in some European countries. We are not alone. And in a somewhat related story, a federal task force is recommending for the first time screening adults under the age of 65 for anxiety. Anxiety disorders are the top mental illness in the country. It affects about 19% of the adult population. The task force also says that all adults should continue to be screened for depression. A sign of the times. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on those donate buttons.